Joining me now is Dr. Rochelle Walensky, Director of the CDC. Dr. Walensky, thank you for joining us again. Pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me back, Anjali.
There's been so much that's been happening. I know that, you know, you and I just talked about being in a different place really here in the US. And unfortunately, we're still seeing the impact of this virus and the pandemic, worried about that stealth variant and its potential takeover. So let's start off there. Do you at this time anticipate that we're going to continue to see BA.2 sort of make a crawl in and extend the tail of this surge?
Well, so what we've seen so far with the Omicron variant in general is that cases have come down dramatically. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that that can and will continue. We are seeing an increased number of the BA.2, what you're calling the stealth variant, up from about 1% to about 3.5% nationwide. We have seen in some areas of the world where that variant has emerged that it has slowed down the decline of cases. So we're watching for that carefully, but so far we haven't seen that happen.
What about the vaccines now? I know that we are pretty set when it comes to the adults and other age groups, but that under 5 is still a question. I know that there is set to be some action in the coming weeks, especially to start off with, and we're anticipating that there might be a third dose needed and to just sort of start that off. Can you walk me through that logic and sort of why that's being deemed the best possible route right now?
Right. So the process, maybe I'll just walk you through the process, and that is that the Pfizer has submitted the data to the FDA, or in the process of submitting the data to the FDA. Those data will be reviewed by their advisory meeting, but their advisory group. That group will render an opinion, and then the FDA will take action towards authorization or not. That'll then come to the CDC, and our advisory committee will review those data as well, and then I will take an action based on their advice as well. I have not yet seen the data from the Pfizer study. As you note, the data that will be presented are for two doses, and there is always an opportunity for a third dose as well.
So just kind of following the suit of what we saw with the adults almost. When we talk about that, though, when we talk about, you know, the process, and I know, you know, you've been really under a large microscope in the past several months, maybe in the past year, to be fair. And there've been some hiccups along the way. I think on one hand, you've done, you know, an attempt at really giving the full information that's required to understand what's going on, but that's maybe gotten lost in translation for the general public. What is it that you see as sort of key to recouping that and sort of helping move forward from now, considering the time lost and all the maybe misinformation and mistrust that's been building up?
You know, what we've committed to is a scientific process that is very transparent. All of our meetings of our advisory committee with all of their scientists are open, they are public, they are watchable on the web. And because of that transparency in science, you have a lot of scientific opinions. And then my job is to synthesize those opinions and under a judgment based on the opinions of incredible experts in the field of vaccination. And so that's what we will continue to do. We're in a pandemic. We are needing to make decisions at speeds that we have not had to make many decisions before. But ultimately, CDC and FDA together are responsible for the safety and efficacy of these vaccines. And I'm really pleased to say that through all of this, we have extraordinarily safe, extraordinarily effective vaccines. And that's really paramount in this.
On that point, on the safety, I know there have been some concerns over time about especially the mRNA vaccines, the myocarditis that's been present. And I know that the discussions are just starting on sort of expanding that time between initial and booster. What do you have to say about that moving forward, sort of where your thoughts are and how that really impacts the future of vaccine uptake?
So we are, you know, looking those data have been reviewed. What I'll go back to, though, is these vaccines are extraordinarily safe. They're extraordinarily effective when they've been given as they've been given in the 0 to 3 weeks, zero dose at 0 and 3 weeks for Pfizer and 0 and 4 weeks for Moderna. We will look at those data, continue to review those data and the discussion about whether that timeline should be extended and or whether it should be permissive to be extended is certainly under consideration right now. But maybe I'll go back to a really important premise, and that is while people have commented on the safety of these vaccines with regard to myocarditis, there was just a study last week demonstrating the real risk of myocarditis in the setting of COVID itself, a 15-fold increased risk of myocarditis associated with COVID. So I think we really need to understand the risk of disease, as well as the risk of death, hospitalization, and many other manifestations of COVID itself.
Speaking of timelines, I want to talk about masking. We're seeing some states sort of advocate for removing mandates, obviously with the decrease in Omicron and the current surge. But generally speaking, I think it's safe to say we've sort of shifted to understanding that this virus is airborne and that masks are in fact helpful. That's obviously why the administration decided to send masks to people, or rather to the pharmacists. But tell me about how you see these movements. I know over time, it's always been a controversy whenever a state decides to lift mandates or impose them. What do you see as sort of the answer and how we should be thinking about masking?
So first, I'll say that CDC provides guidance and that these policies have always been at the state and local level, and we would encourage state and local level to continue in those policies. We don't make those policies. What I will say, though, is that we still have 290,000 cases every single day, that we have about 2,300 deaths every day, that death count is still higher than the peak of our Delta surge in the fall. And so while we understand what governors are saying, we also want to make sure that people are safe and that CDC has not amended our guidance right now. We continue to recommend masking in schools for everyone. We continue to recommend masking in public indoor settings in areas of higher substantial transmission. And that right now is everywhere in the country.
How do you see that playing a role in sort of this return to office discussion and largely speaking, getting back to a quote unquote normal? There's a lot of anxiety around that, right? And I know that we've sort of established that this pandemic will eventually become endemic, but when that happens, still we don't know. Of course, this virus has been challenging for everyone. So talk to me about that and sort of what you would say in terms of looking out for 2022, the surges that you expect and anticipate and how you expect that to impact daily life.
So we know everyone wants to get out of this crisis. I want to get out of this crisis for sure. And what I can say is, as we look down the field and say, well, what does it look like coming next? We know that our layered strategies work. We know that more and more people who are vaccinated, who are boosted, have more protection. We know that there are testing strategies that can keep people safe. There are masking strategies that keep people safe. And one of the most important things in my mind is to make sure our schools are open. And right now, with all of those strategies that we have in place and trying to get more of our children vaccinated, we've been able to keep our schools safely open. 96% of our schools are open right now. So we are looking toward a time where we are out of this crisis mode, that we are living with this disease. We are doing so because we have a lot of people vaccinated, a lot of people protected, and then we have many other strategies, including treatment, that can rescue people if they do get infected and get sick.
What about looking at the airline industry? I know that they've been pushing to drop testing requirements, generally speaking. So what do you see as sort of that long-term play for testing, for travel, as we see that the global pandemic is still affecting the globe?
Yeah, it certainly is. And what I will go back to really is I'm cautiously optimistic that our cases have come down dramatically, that our hospitalizations are coming down dramatically. But what I will still say is that we came down from a very high level and that our hospitalizations right now are higher than they ever were during the peak of our Delta surge. So while we will look down the field and say, what does this look like and how can we relax some of our mitigation strategies, first, we always need to be prepared for what may come around the corner. And second, we're not quite ready to do so yet.
Tell me about the concerns about the long term of this, because I know, you know, I've spoken to some virologists who are saying the animal population is one area that's, you know, serving as a reservoir for extending this. And then we also know, of course, globally, we're still struggling to get doses to some areas in need to help quell any future variants. What are your thoughts there on sort of how this plays out?
So we know that wherever there is viral replication, there's the potential for viral mutation, and then, of course, the potential for variants to emerge. And that includes not only in our animal reservoirs, the white-tailed deer is where we're seeing more of it, but also for people across the world, which is why it's so very hard to not just vaccinate here. It's so very important to not just vaccinate here in the United States, but to work with our sister countries around the world to make sure that people get vaccinated around the world. The more protection we have as a global community, the less likely that those mutations will occur, that those variants will occur, and that even if they did occur, that they would lead to a surge that would result in some of the crises we've seen over the last 2 years.
Certainly. And I want to talk about, broadly speaking, you know, we've seen Pfizer is specifically moving really far ahead when it comes to the vaccines that are available for the different age groups. We do also have some others pending in terms of FDA approval. Do you see the platform sort of changing, the dynamic changing in terms of how many options we have and whether or not that will change in terms of vaccine hesitancy?
So, Anjali, we still have a lot of science to do here. We do know we have several different platforms here in the United States. We have the two mRNA platforms, the Moderna and the Pfizer. We also have the Johnson & Johnson, which is a platform that has a longer history than the mRNA platform. So there are options already. The potential for more options, I think, will only be a good thing. But I think we still have a lot of work to do, and that may not be the only ticket out of our vaccine hesitancy.
And a final one for you, just recapping the last year, because I wanted to get, you know, your thoughts, and I'm sure you've answered this quite a few times, but looking at how we've changed, and to your point of discovering the science there, the change that has happened in how we've understood the transmission of COVID. Initially, you know, really adamant on the droplets, its lack of suspension in the air, to now understanding that it does in fact travel easily. Is that more of a sort of evolution of the virus itself, or are we just understanding it better? And what are the implications for, say, indoor spaces for some time to come?
So we continue to learn more and more. And in fact, we continue to learn more and more, not just about SARS-CoV-2, but about specific variants and what might make them more transmissible. Why was Alpha more so than wild type, Delta more so than Alpha, and now Omicron more so than Delta, and BA2 more so than BA1. So we continue to learn more and more. The standard principles actually remain the same, and that is more ventilation is better. We've known that for many respiratory viruses, not just SARS-CoV-2. We know that masking works. We know that, if you can, you know, wear a better fitting mask, even better. If you can wear an N95, you probably have better protection. And we've seen science now that has shown that's demonstrated that as well.
We'll leave it there for now. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, CDC Director, thank you so much again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Anjali.